Season 5, Episode 15, Don't Kill the Messenger. The DOA that Sipwoods and Simone come into is a woman tied up with cuts all over her. And she was tied up with leather thongs.
Leather thongs?
Yeah, he says, tied up with thongs. And then Sipwoods is like, what? And he's like, you know, bootlaces. Never called bootlaces thongs. That's just me personally.
Yeah, I thought thongs were, like, the underwear or what you wear, the type of sandal.
Or the topic of Cisco's greatest hits. They don't have much to go on because there was no break-in, there was no robbery. It doesn't seem like there was a big struggle. So they're kind of wondering what could possibly go on. They find out from the cop that it was called in by her coworkers when she didn't show up to work because she works at a hospital as a nurse. And this neighbor, Cudney, seems to know way too much about this woman's life.
Yeah, Richard Cudney.
Who was just like, yeah, she had an ex-boyfriend. He had this weird walk. And it's like, okay, too much information. Like, he knew that she was seeing another guy very recently and how often that he'd been over. And they kind of just cut it off with Cudney pretty quick. They're just like, we're done with you. You're kind of annoying, and we don't like you. They then go to another...
Which is kind of bad, like, could you say, like, this is bad policing on their part?
Kind of, because they do...
Because granted, the guy's annoying, but the guy is giving a lot of information and a lot of tidbits, and, like, as a detective, you'd think you could, like, pick up on some of that. I don't know.
Well, that's true. They do get out of him that her ex-boyfriend is a guy named Larry Tremaine who works at the coffee shop. It's just very odd that he knows all that information. And a second dude had been coming by. But then they then talk to Mrs. Schmidt. They're like, hey, do you have anything that could help us? And she says, take fingerprints. And then Sipwoods looks at her. That's my favorite part of the scene is Sipwoods looks at her kind of with like this, I wish I could, like, just end you right now. Almost like he hadn't had his morning coffee. He's not ready to deal with the morons.
Sipwoods definitely, like, longs for the day where you could, like, smack a woman around every now and then for being stupid.
He's like Sean Connery, as long as you don't use a closed fist.
Exactly. And use your fingers instead of the back of your hand, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's a little snap. It's like a swap.
Anyway, they leave that neighbor and they go downstairs, and that's the beginning of the episode. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, go through every single episode of the best show ever, NYPD Blue. And this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. To continue with that story, they go to check out Larry Tremaine at this coffee shop, who, Larry Tremaine is a, like, shitty, barely working actor. The actor's name is Alexander Eberg? E-Aberg? May have completely fucked up how to spell it. It could be Enberg. Alexander Enberg is what I would call a poor man's David Arquette.
Alexander Enberg, yeah. He was on Star Trek, dude. Were you on Star Trek?
I was not on Star Trek, but I also don't look a lot like David Arquette. And a guy you get when you can't get David Arquette.
Yeah, but I think butterfly effect. Imagine if instead of giving David Arquette the chance, we gave Alex Enberg David Arquette's chances.
Do you think
Alex would have been a better actor? Because, like, we learned pretty quickly that David Arquette really can't act.
But he can wrestle now, so...
Yeah, he's been wrestling since Ready to Rumble, but, like...
He's also, hey, watch yourself. David Arquette is a WWE world champion.
Yeah, okay, that doesn't mean he can act, though. Like, he still missed my point. That's great.
Are you telling me Booker T can't act, Kyle?
So maybe when, instead of giving David Arquette chances, we let him just do these little small roles, he would have found his way to wrestling earlier, which means he could have worked on his career, made it a little bit better. And then Alex Enberg could have actually, like, been a good actor.
Yeah, he could have been in Scream. He could have married Courtney Cox. She could have been Courtney Cox Enberg.
Yeah.
Well, Larry Tremaine works at this coffee shop alone. He has a cute moment with Sipwoods where he pretends to not be Larry Tremaine, which pisses Sipowicz off, but he says, you could be a collection agency. Maybe I don't want to talk to you.
That's a hell of a smart response, too. You gotta respect it.
He's shocked that his ex-girlfriend is dead, and says he hasn't really talked to the new boyfriend that much, and they broke up because he would consider himself kind of a loser, but he's not gonna give up his art for any woman, because he has integrity.
So basically, that failed artist for, I'm not gonna get a real job.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. I'll sling some coffee and live in a shitty apartment until I can achieve my dream of acting. While they're interrogating him at the coffee shop, because he can't leave, he's the only one working there, a blind customer comes in, and fun fact, that blind customer is Carmine DiStofano, who has only one other credit. He is the blind ex-mafia dude in Boondock Saints.
That's funny.
He only has two credits. One is NYPD Blue, one is Boondock Saints, where he plays a blind dude. I guess he's actually blind, at least I hope so. Or else that's weird, weird typecasting.
But, I mean, not really. It was only two episodes, you know what I mean?
But it's, like, of all the things in the world, you're an actor, the only two things in life you get are blind dudes.
You can't be picky when you're starting out, dude.
And he was starting out late, because he's a pretty old dude. He's complaining that he can't get his cappuccino. He says cappuccino, I'm pretty sure, and not cappuccino, and it was bothering
me. Yeah, he says, and he says it more than once.
DOA's
cappuccino
name is,
over here.
And he eventually, because even Simone and Sipowicz are like, dude, if you just wait, we can get you the coffee as soon as we're done here. At one point, Simone just straight up does a bitchy shush, which is hilarious. A straight up, like, Karen shh, which is hilarious. When they cut back to Mr. Tremaine, after what's-his-name leaves, the blind customer, he just says, what a drag about Darlene. Which is, like, hilarious. What a drag about Darlene.
I mean, I don't know. Anytime I hear the name Darlene, I just think of Roseanne.
As we all do, as the nation does.
And she was all like, Darlene! And I was like... It's kind of ruined the name, Darlene, for me.
A prelude to Carol.
Carol!
As they leave, Sipowicz says something funny, because the blind guy pissed him off. And he says, one lousy handicap, and he figures he's got a license to butt in. And I was like, well, he is blind. That is a pretty big deal. He was a dick, but it's not cool to make fun of blind people.
Where I work, it's right by an apartment complex for the blind.
Mm-hmm.
And, I just have to say, some of them suck.
Some of them suck.
Like, I don't know, like, what it is or what, like, cause or gives them a right to, like, just be snippy, but goddamn, dude, some of them are so rude.
They run what's going on for fancy. They like the actor, but they're still going to look around at this current boyfriend. And then while they're talking about that, Tommy Richardson shows up, who is a patrolman. We haven't met him before in the series, but he apparently works in that precinct.
Tommy
Richardson. That's another thing. We got Tommy and Bobby. Adults using names for 10-year-olds is very weird.
I feel like I'm watching an episode of the Rugrats.
Tommy Pickles.
His, like, accent and voice from the get-go are troubling.
Too much?
They disturb me a little bit.
Little too hard on the New York accent for Tommy?
I don't, like, is it New York? Or is it, like, it feels like it's a cross of New York and a little bit of Boston, too. Mm. But we'll talk more about his ridiculous,
his nonsense
accent later, or, like, how he speaks later, because he does something later on that's pretty funny.
So he shows up and he says, he's a good friend of Darlene's. He hangs out with her all the time. They've been friends since high school. They were once together. But then he went to the force, ended up getting married to Lori.
Yeah, isn't that, like, are we, so my question is, are we supposed to think any, like, why is he there?
Well, that's the other thing. Because we've watched NYPD Blue so much, we know this guy is involved just by the nature of how the episode works out. Because why else would this fucking dude talk to them?
Exactly. Like, why is he coming in so hot, too?
He shows up and he immediately throws suspicion on the current boyfriend, saying he's okay if he has his meds. And they're like, well, did she say she wasn't having his meds? He's like, well, I don't know. I'm not sure. And then he's like, what about the current boyfriend? He's like, oh, he's just, or I mean, the ex-boyfriend. And he's like, well, he's just kind of a loser. The other guy on his meds, though. He mentions the meds twice in the first conversation. Which is like, okay, we'll talk to him, dude. We haven't talked to him yet. And they even said, hey, we just got into it, Tommy. And he goes, oh, okay, cool, okay. And then he says, you know how some things in life, you make like two changes and things would have been different? I probably would have married Darlene. And it's like, right there, I would look at you immediately. Like, why do you need to tell me this?
He's like, every negative about like a suspect, he's like clicking all the channels.
He's hitting all them boxes.
Clicking all them boxes. He's leaving no Chads behind.
No dangling Chads.
He's just doing a lot of suspicious shit, you know? Like, for no reason.
And Sipowicz catches on that suspicion. Oh, not right away. But, actually, that's another thing. Neither of them in the first conversation is like, oh, that was kind of weird. They're just like, yeah, you know, just concerned. Just concerned about this woman who wasn't his wife. That he hung out with all the time.
Yeah, right? Like, I mean, we're seeing it now. Like, we're seeing it now in, like, the real world where, like, cops, like, just can't ever say another cop did something wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In the sense of this show, right, Bobby Simone is supposed to be, like, the greatest detective since Sherlock Holmes.
After watching some Sherlock Holmes, they're not even close to Sherlock Holmes, but I understand what you mean.
But, like, that's what they make him out to be, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And fucking Sipowicz isn't half bad when he's, like, not drunk. That's his storyline. But, like, these guys can't, like, see this bullshit Tommy coming in the way he... I don't know.
Another thing, it's like, okay, maybe he's just concerned. The next scene, after they say goodbye to Tommy, they go pick up... They actually don't go to pick up Jason. They go to the hospital where she works. They call it the Nut House because they're very, very... Not the word.
Understanding?
They're very understanding of people with mental issues.
Yeah, sympathetic, I think is the word.
they're very good with that. And they're great
with... This is the early 2000s, like... We weren't jumping to conclusions on a bunch of this stuff.
So, they go to the hospital, the mental hospital, and they come back with Jason, who was the boyfriend of Darlene. And Jason is essentially admitting to it on the walk up the stairs. And Sipowicz and Simone have to tell him, like, hey, what did we say? When we get you situated, when we get you to sign off all the rights, then you can admit to what you did. And he's like, okay, and then they offer him a beverage, and he's like, I don't want to drink anything until I have admitted to her murder.
Oh, yeah, okay. he keeps pissing Simone, Sipowicz off at that.
Simone goes to set him up in the room, and Sipowicz says hello to Dolores, who is confused, because I don't think he pays her any mind ever. And then he is sarcastically very excited about this, because he's like, I know this is going to get screwed up, but I just want to say this is how... business should be conducted. And Fancy's like, he was at the hospital. He's like, he was in the waiting room, and when we introduced ourselves, he gave himself up to be arrested. And then another thing that's very suspicious, Fancy said, did you read him his rights? He's like, I must have read him his rights as many times as I've read my rights so far as a detective. He says that he admitted to it 5 times, and then he's like, well, we don't have to call his family or anything. And then Fancy goes, it's not our job to judge his competency. I was like, is that true? They could just be like, wow, he's not mentally well enough to know what he's talking about. Let's arrest him. Like, that's just okay.
Even Fancy crosses that line sometimes, you know? It's all about just clearing the case.
So he's telling Fancy, like, yeah, it's looking great. It's going to be a slam dunk, going to be sweet. Then a doctor shows up. And says he's there to talk to Sipowicz, and Sipowicz gets pissed. Even Fancy tries to cut him off and says, well, he's working on something here. Maybe we can work out this outside. And the doctor says, well, I'm his physician, and this really can't wait.
That's good for that dude, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, because I know that there's crazy rules about doctor-patient confidentiality and shit. And how this guy did it is not... ethical, but once we figure out what's going on, it was a pretty good idea.
He's trying to just save his life.
Also, this actor who plays the doctor is Aaron Lustig, who was in earlier episodes of NYPD Blue. Sip is pissed that the dude is in his place of work, and the guy explains, "You told me not to call your home so I don't tell your wife, and every time I leave a message here, it goes unanswered. I ethically have to let you know that your options." And Sipowicz says, "Let me tell you what your options are. Don't call. Don't come here ever again." At one point, the doctor kind of hints at what's going on by saying this isn't inevitably a death sentence. And Sipowicz is basically ready to punch the dude.
Yeah, he tells him, like, go.
And then the doctor gives him kind of an arm grab. Like a nice, friendly arm grab. And then leaves.
The dude's only trying to save his life.
Yeah, it's one of those things where when Sipowicz gets scared and angry, he just, like, shuts down and acts like a fucking baby about shit. Because then the rest of this episode, every time they talk about doctors, he's like, I don't want to deal with those people. Those phony bunch of bastards. And it's just like, Sipowicz, like, fucking relax, bro. Even though, the reason he's upset is a pretty big reason. It's just like, don't blame the doctors, it's happening. They then cut to Jason, who is in an interrogation room. And they're running down him, waiving his rights. And I don't know if... The actor's name is Matthew Glaive. He's been in a bunch of shit here and there, a bunch of small shit. I don't know if he's doing a good job or not, if that makes sense.
I was just about to ask you, what do you do? Sometimes like, I go back and forth and I'm like, oh man, like, sometimes he's pretty good, and then sometimes I'm like, what's happening?
I know that this isn't a video podcast, but the thing that, like, I go back and forth on is, he does a line where he goes, and sometimes we'd cabaret. And, like, the look he gives after he does that is like, are you joking? Like, is this a joke? Is this you, like, jokingly playing a mentally handicapped person?
Cause yeah, like, are you Sean Penn in it here?
You never go full retard, Kyle.
That scene can't be made anymore.
I am just quoting a film where Robert Downey Jr. played blackface, and nobody cares because it's just that funny.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of kills it, though.
It's a great, great fucking movie. So Jason, he clearly has something. We find out that he has schizophrenia, which is controlled by medication.
So as a trained psych major, do you concur with these thoughts? Do we think he's schizo?
I mean, it sounds like he's because that's the thing that I went back and forth on. I'm also, I have a bachelor's, so I have no authority to diagnose him or really enter the conversation. But I will say, the thing that I have to remind myself when dealing with is he is on medication. So, like, what we see of him right now really doesn't show us what he's like when he's having, like, delusional episodes.
What he's capable of.
So, like, when he's saying, I know I did it because I have had episodes, and they're like, okay, so what it led up to you killing her? And he's like, well, I remember coming back and seeing her dead. And he was like, no, what did you remember about murdering her? And he's like, well, when I get delusional, sometimes I don't remember what happened. And they're like, okay, well, what happened before then? He's like, well, I was upset that she didn't want to go out because she felt bad and felt sick. So I went to a drugstore and I got her some cold remedies, and then I went up to see her and she was dead. And I knew I had to have done it. And then, like, and that's the best part is when Simone is like, you do remember killing Darlene, right? And then he says, let's say I did. And Simone is like, let's say you did? And like screams at him. The scene also highlights the fact that he is detail-oriented because he was like, I went to a Duane Reade drugstore, and I got some cold remedies, and then starts listing the cold remedies by their, like, scientific names. So it's like, the dude is with it, but he doesn't remember killing her, which is very suspicious.
So does that mean he's with it?
Sorry. I think he's... How do I put this? I think he definitely has whatever a trained physician, trained psychologist says he is. But I think the drugs just bring him down to a level where he's kind of weird, if that makes sense. Like, he could be really fucking crazy, because he said he set his brother's house on fire, and he got into traffic accidents on purpose. You know, I think we're dealing with somebody who, under the wrong circumstances, could be really, really messed up. So, I just think now he's a bit odd and awkward. And that's the other part of this episode that I was like, this is oddly progressive, yet incredibly insensitive when it comes to people with mental health issues. Because the dude, I think, is with it enough to acknowledge that he has this problem, that he has to work on it to get better, and he has to be on top of the medication so that he can be a functioning member of society in some way.
Yeah.
But then again, every time they talk about it, they're like, the nut house, the puzzle house, the crazy guy, Napoleon, the psycho, the nut job. Like, they don't call him by his name a majority of the time. And even when he becomes sympathetic, because, I mean, I'll continue with the story. They come out of the room, and they're upset, and Fancy's like, he never gave you any indication he didn't actually do it in the riot. He's like, he just kept saying he did it. And then while they're talking about what's going on with them, Richardson shows up and asks, hey, I heard you picked up the guy.
Yeah, it was just, that's very weird.
And they said, yeah, he doesn't remember. And then Richardson's like, well, what the hell is that? And it's like, hey, why are you getting fucking upset? Like, it's our job to figure out what happened. And I understand she's a friend of yours, a good friend, but shit, man, fucking relax.
Yeah, is this not, like, is this not a cause for concern? That he might, you know a little more than he's letting on? Like, I don't know. Shit.
When he gets upset, they tell him to calm down. And then as they leave, Sipwood says, hey, if we don't get anything from Napoleon, we could always sick Richardson on him. So, the next scene, they're working out what they have and where they gotta go. They're going to ask Jason's doctor about what he thinks about the situation. And they're going to talk to the nurses that knew the woman. And Sipowicz volunteers for the nurses because he doesn't want to talk to the doctors.
Do you think that's because he doesn't want to be seen?
Well, I think he just doesn't want to talk to doctors. Because Sipowicz is a very simple dude. When he's upset about something, he's upset at everybody about something. I think it's literally like, this doctor makes me angry, doctors make me angry, I don't want to talk to doctors. Hospitals make me scared, I don't want to go to hospitals, I'm not going to hospitals. Like, that's just how he's running with things.
I get what you're saying.
While they're working out what they know and what they gotta do, Simone brings up, he's like, should we be looking at Tommy Richardson? And then they all kind of look at each other, and Sipowicz is like, I just don't know what his motive is. Unless he was banging this woman, and then she was trying to break it off or tell his wife or something. But nobody has mentioned him. Like, the neighbors haven't mentioned him coming by, and the ex-boyfriend hasn't mentioned him being around. There's, like, no one talking about him.
There's no reason to suspect him, other than him just, like, kind of being a weirdo.
They basically resigned to, Simone is going to talk to his doctor, and Sipowicz is going to talk to the nurses. So then the next scene there, they had a little, you know, phone bank where they're calling different people. The ex-boyfriend Larry comes back in while they're on the phone, and Sipowicz and Simone finish up their
nervous coffee shop guy.
Sipowicz and Simone get off their phone calls, and Sipowicz says, hey, didn't we talk to the mother and said she was an only child? And he goes, yeah. He's like, because I just got off the phone with a nurse who said that they talked to her brother. And then Larry's like, yeah, her brother Tommy. Oh, no, he doesn't even say Tommy. He's like, yeah, her brother. And he's like, what do you know about it? He's like, oh, I was going to talk to you guys. She was really close with her brother, and he would probably know where this new boyfriend is. And Simone's like, really? I'll be right back. And Larry sits down with Sipowicz. They have a conversation about the theater, which is hilarious, because Sipowicz seems like a real theater-going dude. He said that he's only seen the play Sleuth, and it was terrible, probably because he didn't think that they covered being a detective very well. Then Simone brings in a picture and goes, do you see anybody in this picture you recognize? And he's like, oh yeah, that's Darlene's brother, Tommy. And then points at what we assume is Tommy Richardson. He's like,
yeah.
He's like, what is that?
Simone gives, like, Sipowicz a look.
And Larry goes, is that like some kind of weird baseball thing? He's like, yeah, that was the Labor Day precinct baseball game. Sipowicz and Simone come back from the psych doctor. When they come back, Tommy Richardson is waiting for them on the bench.
That's right.
So they're like, hey, Tommy. And he's like, hey, did you guys get any more info on this case? And he's like, yeah, let's actually go talk about it in the coffee room, you know, away from prying eyes. So they get to the coffee room, and he's like, oh, so you spoke to this guy's doctor? He goes, yes, we did, Tommy. He is a paranoid schizophrenic that's controlled by medication, and he doesn't think Jason could have committed this murder. And he goes, oh, you believe him? And Sipowicz is like, well, you can't believe... He's like, well, you can't believe anything those guys say. They don't make any sense. And then they start interrogating Tommy, but very slyly, where they're like, hey, did you tell the ex-boyfriend that you're her brother?
The brother, yeah.
And Tommy's playing dumb, where he's, like, drinking the coffee. He's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, he said that you mentioned that you were her brother, and you were very close with her. He's like, yeah, I may have done that, so I don't seem suspicious to them, like I'm competition. He's like, all right. Did you say that to the new boyfriend? He's like, you mean the psycho? And he's like, yeah, the new guy. Did you say that to him as well? And he's like, well, what's the problem? He's like, well, just that you're fucking lying to us. That's the part that's kind of like, okay, Tommy fucking did something. Because they're asking very simple questions that are like, yeah, it's important whether you lie to us or not about how you are related to this person in some way.
I think that's when we're supposed to start thinking about him.
Then they find out in that interview the reason no one has really seen them together at her place is because he shows up very late. He's like, oh yeah, I would always get off work really late and then go see her. And they're like, oh, so, late at night. He's like, yeah. He's like, all right. Sipowicz plays hard cop and saying he just doesn't want people impeding his investigation. And he's like, Darlene and my wife are friends. And Sipowicz is like, what does that matter? Like, what does that matter at all? Who cares if they're friends? It doesn't change the fact that you could have done something to her.
I think Sipowicz is playing it the right way.
And he calls him, not everybody's a sick drunk like you. And then he calls him, and then he says, birds of a feather when they're going to go talk to Jason. He's like, so what, I'm a sick drunk and a psycho? So they go to talk to Jason, which is really fucked up, because this is the part where it's like, I feel so bad for him, like this character, because he's clearly trying to make it work and trying to be normal, in quotes. Because he's like, hey, have you ever talked to Darlene's brother? He's like, yeah, I talked to Tommy. And, you know, I tried to be as honest and forthcoming because I assume he wants to know that my intentions are good.
When he started talking about all that stuff, I was like, well, that's weird.
And then he's like, then they mentioned, like, did you tell him about your mental health problems? Like, oh, yeah, I would feel bad not telling him about that. So I told him about my medications and my episodes. And they could tell just from that conversation, they're like, oh, so Tommy set this dude up. Yeah. Like, he knows the guy has episodes off his medication. He had him talking about times that he didn't have his medication. And now this guy is thinking to himself, maybe I didn't take it. And even when they go to talk to Jason, he's like, we talked to your doctor, and he says you should be fine for a week without taking any more of your medication. And he's like, well, what if I haven't already been taking it? He's like, no, he thinks you have. And he goes, have I? That's the thing about dealing with, like, paranoid people, like I am one of them. Trying to convince them that it's fine when they're paranoid is very difficult, especially when he has to take medication to cut down those thoughts, and then you have to worry about if you have those thoughts creeping in. So he's kind of in a shitty situation, and for this guy to play with that is, like, really fucking rude. But this whole conversation, they figure out, like, basically Tommy is sort of setting him up, and they're like, hey, from now on, don't say you did it anymore, okay, Jason? And then they leave, and when they leave, a cop comes in to watch him, and the cop sits down with his paper and then looks at Jason, and it's like, hey, man, don't be so judgmental, this dude. Like, like, it felt mean, the way he was like, this crazy dude. And it's like, man, fucking, your job is to watch people today. Just relax.
Just, like, sit back and chill.
They run down what's happening for Fancy, and when they walk in, they basically say, we gotta look at Tommy. And he's like, the doctor doesn't think this guy did it. And Fancy's like, doesn't mean Tommy did. And then they both kind of get offended, like, we're not just throwing out Tommy as an idea. Like, we have reasons. And they explain that he's lying about being her brother. He's met with every boyfriend to go over their intentions. he's over there at all hours of the night. And then Mike Shannon shows up, who is another uniform cop and the delegate for the, I guess, the union?
He's the main delegate for the police squad.
But I guess there's different union delegates for each, like, section, because James is the union delegate for the detectives.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I don't know how it works. So Shannon shows up, and they're like, do you think he's here for Tommy? And then Shannon walks in, and he's like, I'm here representing Tommy Richardson as his delegate. And Sipowicz is like, so he's making it adversarial. And then Shannon comes back, and I was like, you're the one making it adversarial, Sipowicz. And they explain, hey, look, we're not trying to hang Tommy. It's just he is not providing the information adequately, and it's making us suspicious.
Basically what Tommy's doing, like he's starting to make this a bigger deal than it needs to be.
And, I mean, that's the thing, because at the end of this, Simone just says he's just trying to do his job. If you're Mike Shannon, you hear, okay, this dude is being questioned and now being treated a little more aggressively, and he has told you, by the way, they have a dude in custody who has admitted to the crime.
Yeah.
So now you're going in going, why are you hassling one of my homies?
One of us.
Why are you hassling a cop when a guy admitted to the crime? And Sipowicz is like, yeah, he also admitted to the war in Bosnia. Shannon's like, I just want you to know, anytime you talk to Tommy, I need to be there. And then he says, are you going to IAB? Which is kind of like really the trump card. It's like, if they're going to IAB, then they believe he definitely did it. And then it's a whole set of other circumstances. And they go, no, which tells you that we're not trying to hang him. We just need to get more information out of him.
Literally, we're just trying to do our jobs.
And then the best part was, they're like, and you let him know that we're going to have to talk to his wife. And then Shannon's like, you're going to disrupt his marriage on spec? And then Fancy says, my guys know how to answer questions that don't get him in trouble.
They're going to be fine.
And Shannon looks at him and goes, okay, and then leaves. This next one's technically the end of the episode, and we haven't even talked about the Kirkendall Medavoy story, which I can do in 5 minutes. The Medavoy and Kirkendall story, which kind of blows because it's the title of the episode and it's not that interesting.
Some drug dealer gets robbed, someone steps in, he ends up getting killed instead, and the kid who gets robbed is being a weirdo about it, raising red flags.
Well, he doesn't
find out.
He doesn't raise that big of red flags. What happens is, and that's why, like, this does have a pretty big question that I forgot that I was going to ask, but just to run through it very quickly, Medavoy and Kirkendall get a dead bike messenger who tried to intervene when a guy's backpack got stolen. When they talk to the guy, he's like, I don't know why the dude tried to help me, and I don't know who stole my backpack. Just somebody stole it, the bike messenger tried to intervene, they shot and killed him. Next time we see him, Medavoy's talking to him about what's in the backpack, and Medavoy's like, I don't really have a whole lot of hope you'll get it back, and he goes, okay, whatever. Then Kirkendall runs by and says, well, the bike messenger was clean that got shot, but we're going to run the Gabe guy through BCI as well. They bring in Gabe, who is the guy who had his backpack stolen, and they go, hey, we know there was something wrong in that backpack. He's like, what are you talking about? I just had my sweater. That's my favorite part. He's like, I just had my sweater and my orange in there. And he goes, don't forget your hair gel. They say, basically, we have collars for you for drug dealing, so we know there had to be something in that backpack. Do we? Isn't it possible that the guy was arrested for drug offenses and someone just happened to steal his backpack?
No way.
You don't think so? There's no possible way.
No way, not in Medavoy's America.
Well, when they said, like, look, we know that you... It turns out the guy had drugs in his backpack, and it was stolen by different competing drug dealers, because, you know, competition is the spice of capitalism.
Such is life.
The point I'm making is, they're like, hey, look, you got arrested for drug crimes, we know there was something in that backpack. If he just turned around and was like, there wasn't anything in that backpack. Maybe they thought I was still a drug dealer, but there's nothing in it. This story ends, and they wasted this dude's time for, like, no reason at all.
Well, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time.
It turns out that, yeah, I did have some stuff. The way he puts it is, I just brought some people together. Which, you know, drug dealers. Building a sense of community in your town.
I mean, that's all a drug deal really is. It's just two people coming together.
That's all a drug dealer is. Bringing people together.
That's all a drug deal is, man. If you think about it, it's two people coming together to exchange goods and services. It's capitalism at its best.
Look, and he's just selling a product that makes you feel good. We don't go and arrest bakers.
No, if anything, we encourage fat slobs. I say this as I'm starving and wanting, like, pancakes.
Gabe gives up these Colombian drug dealers, and while he's doing it, he's in the car with Medavoy smoking, and Medavoy's like, could you put that out? It's aggravating my sinuses. He's like, I gotta do something while I'm here. He's like, why can't you just be? And he's like, be what? He's like, be what you are. And he's like, I am. I'm a smoker. He's like, that's pretty old school comedy writing there.
And by old school, you mean played out?
He gives up this guy who is walking with another dude. And that dude walking next to him is a guy named Emilio Rivera. I thought he looked familiar. It's because he is now the star of Mayans and was on the show Sons of Anarchy. He's now doing, now doing pretty well for himself.
I mean, pretty well. I mean, better than me.
They arrest the guys, and another thing that kind of happens where they stop both of them, and then they frisk both of them, and then the guy they're not looking for doesn't have anything. It's like, so what do you want to do with him? He's like, just let him go. And it's like, why'd you frisk him to begin with?
Stop and frisk, baby. They can do whatever they want.
You just suspect that he also might have something because he's with this dude, apparently.
Yep.
I will say, I understand it in this context just because they believe this is a murder suspect. So they're like, we don't know if both these guys have guns. But what was weird to me is, like, we frisk him, he's got nothing, and they're like, what do you want to do with him? He's like, well, let him go. He's just with the guy that we suspect of murder. Like, we can't take him in on nothing. I understand that we need to make sure we're both safe because we believe one of these guys is a murderer who used a gun. But if the other guy doesn't have anything, we don't even know if he's involved with this at all. They bring in this dude who is silent. He refuses to answer any questions. They ask him his name, and he doesn't answer on the street. And he refuses to answer in the interrogation room. At one point, Medavoy says, you're starting to piss me off, fella. And it was like, no one cares.
Medavoy's so tough, dude. It's kind of crazy.
Kirkendall offers him a Pepsi can and hopes to get him to give up his name, and he doesn't after taking a sip. So she's like, well, you lost the rest of your Pepsi. And Medavoy throws him in the cage and says, keep it down. Then she and him leave the room, and he's like, God, that pisses me off. And she's like, let's just run the prints off the soda can.
And that was a hella smart move.
Medavoy says, yeah, we'll see if he's a part of Generation Next. It's one of the...
How much do you think Pepsi paid to have that in there?
I have no idea, but I do love that it got a literal eye roll from Kirkendall. Because
you don't think Medavoy's keeping up with the Joneses?
Well, I just love the idea that he tells the terrible dad joke. She starts to walk away, and he goes, "You know, like the Pepsi commercials." And she goes, "Yep," and rolls her eyes. And then it cuts back to Medavoy, and he gives this look like, "What am I, a fucking piece of shit?" The next time we see them, Medavoy pretends to be psychic that he got the name and four prior counts, which was dumb and not very funny, and even started to piss Kirkendall off.
The best is when he starts to upset. You can see he's starting to upset his, like, co-workers.
Medavoy lets him know that they know his name, they know his priors, and then Kirkendall essentially says, we only want you to go for a stolen backpack, that's not a big deal. And he goes, what about the guy that got hurt? And she's like, oh, he's fine. Not true. That's a lie. That is a pretty large lie. That's a pretty important large lie.
Lying about a death.
Like, I don't know what the rules are, but it's also especially fucked up because he asked twice.
Yeah.
And he also was like, this show especially kind of plays that game, was like, well, if you're a drug dealer, we don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, you're a drug dealer, we don't care. We can do whatever we want to. Same with murderers and pedophiles. But
yeah, like, you don't get any leeway.
What bothers me is the guy's like, okay, well, what about that guy that got hurt? And he's like, he's fine. And then he asks a second time before he starts writing, and they're like, yeah, he's fine. When it's like, that's not even close to true.
That's not at all. He is no longer breathing.
Like, it's so... Maybe it was for time, whatever, but if, like, they told him, no, he died. But you definitely stole the backpack, you basically just admitted to it, and we'll sit here until you write it. That feels better to me than just lying straight to his face that the dude is still alive.
If they tell him he dies, the dude will be like, the dude can then go say, like, oh, I mean, I'm with you. What they're doing is morally and ethically, like, horrible. But they tell him that he's dead. He may now want a lawyer, and he's not going to give up all of the answers that they're looking for now, or he's not going to sign the confession. So they don't want him to know that he's dead yet. But I'm with you. It's wrong, but, I mean, they've done tons of shit that's morally questionable.
So that's the end of that story completely. They lie to him, and he starts writing it down. The end of the episode, Sipowicz and Simone are outside the precinct, and they mention how cold it is on the first floor, implying that the uniform cops are pissy at them because they're going after Tommy Richardson.
After one of their own, cuck.
And Simone says, yeah, it's going to be worse tomorrow if we get something on Tommy. They have one of those moments, those classic NYPD Blue moments, where Sipowicz and his partner are just lying to each other, because Sipowicz is like, oh, she's picking you up, implying Russell, who they say has the flu when really she had herself a miscarriage. I mean, that's the truth.
She had herself a miscarriage.
Simone confirms that lie, saying, yeah, she had the flu. And Sipowicz says, yeah, the flu just knocks all the strength right out of you. And then Simone brings up, Dolores said that you had a doctor come in to talk to you, is everything okay? And he goes, yeah, he's dunning me for a bill, which Simone doesn't believe.
Yeah, Simone knows he's lying.
It's kind of funny how, like, when you're detective partners, you just have this, like, standing agreement that you'll lie to each other, and you know that you're lying to each other. Because they both know that the other person's somewhat lying, in some way.
Well, especially if you've been a partner for so long, you know? And again, he's the greatest detective since Sherlock Holmes, so he can read his partner's body language, but not the fact that Tommy Richardson's being a weirdo.
Well, they know now. Now they know. Now they know that Tommy's on the wrong. Russell shows up. Sipowicz says, like, tells him to watch out because this is open malingering. And Russell says that she'll be back tomorrow. That kind of surprises Simone. And then they say their goodbyes. Sipowicz says hats and mittens. Then they walk to the car and they kiss outside the precinct, which, you know, seems like a bad idea if you're not supposed to be in a relationship.
Like, wouldn't you maybe take it, like, two blocks over?
Wouldn't you wait till you're in the car?
Take it two subway stops or a subway stop before you kiss each other, you know?
Yeah, go to two different subways, get two different sandwiches, and then you kiss each other.
Get some $5 footlongs.
She's going to get that $5 footlong. Oh, shit!
Dude, he was already giving her the $5 footlong.
He was giving her the meatball sandwich. But, essentially,
he just couldn't produce the cookies.
Actually, she's the one that couldn't produce the cookies, because her oven is broken. What?!
I'm saying, she couldn't produce the cookies. miscarriage. Laugh at someone's misfortune.
Oh, my God. Misfortunate miscarriage, the Diane Russell story.
Wow, what? Misfortunate miscarriage.
Oh my lord.
Oh my god.
Well, they have a moment outside the car where she's like, I want to have you during the day and the night, and it's like, just don't make out in front of where you work where you're not supposed to be together. Seems like a pretty easy thing to do.
Yeah, it's like, hey, selfish. Like, just because you're not as good at your job as Bobby is, don't go fucking it up for everybody else, okay?
What do you mean she does an okay job?
Again, she's okay, he's Sherlock Holmes.
Anyway, anything else about this episode?
No, it's just setting up a pretty interesting story.
It's also weird that it's clearly a two-parter, but it doesn't get a two-part title like Lost Israel did. Actually, in theory, this is a three-parter, but it doesn't share titles or anything like that, which is weird.
It's a three-parter, and it... Well, we'll talk about it when we get there.
That's a little spicy tease for all of you. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is now available on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, where you find a podcast, and AsherBrothersPodcast.com. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram AsherBrothersPodcast. I'm on there talking about NYPD Blue most of the time, if you are. And have yourself a good one. Thank you again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls, and thank you to Mike for getting everything back up and running again. I cannot thank you enough. Thank him, and thank you all for listening. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever platform you're using to listen to it. That's how it gets seen by other people, and maybe more people start listening to the show, but more importantly, start watching NYPD Blue. It's currently on Hulu, the entire series. I believe that's the only place it is in terms of streaming services, and not every country has the DVDs. I know America does, but that is a very expensive option for your NYPD Blue viewing. If you need more just NYPD Blue goodness in your life, there's a couple of books out there. What Would Sipowicz Do? A collection of articles written about the show. True Blue, a book about the first couple seasons written by creators and consultants. Then Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, 99 cents on Amazon. Who could be without? Thank you again for listening. Have yourself a good one. Please wash your hands, distance socially, make smart decisions, and have a good one.